It's New Year's Day, 1991. Tennessee is in the Sugar Bowl, and there's a song stuck in the heads of players, coaches, and fans. The same song from 1989's SEC Championship, and now again as the 1990 SEC Champion. Now, as icing on the cake, Tennessee is facing Virginia here in the Superdome. A come-from-behind victory is just 1 yard away, and there's only 17 seconds left in the game. Offensive coordinator Philip Fulmer calls the play, and there's no doubt who will get the ball, and there's no doubt what he will do with it.
The dive! Touchdown! Big Orange in the Superdome! Tony Thompson dives into the end zone, and the captain scores the go-ahead touchdown. The Volunteers lead 23-22 with 31 seconds left to go as McRae and Myslinski bury the defenders and sailing in, catapulting home for a one-point lead is Tennessee's Tony Thompson.
It's hard to believe, but just 2 years earlier, in 1988, this song was so not the song of the year. Nope, I'm sad to say the song of the year for 1988 was the one topping the Billboard charts that year. Yes, you know it's true. Ooh, 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 I love you. That is not a championship song. But it speaks to the weirdness of times. Bad music and bad football. That was 88's calling card to the future. These same guys from 1990, Thompson, Reeves, McRae, Myslinski, and John Fisher, Doug Baird, Anton Davis, the guys that cleared the path and landed in the end zone for the win in New Orleans, were 2 years earlier part of the worst start in Tennessee football history. Now here they are, collecting another trophy, singing in the locker room. Now nobody wants to live through a losing season. Nobody wants to begin a season 0-6. But for these champions of 1989 and 1990, maybe it was necessary. It all started, and is all thanks to, the lessons learned and the character earned that long losing season, when these future champs finished 5-0. From VFL Films and the Vol Network, I'm Ben Bates.
And I'm Barry Rice.
And this is A Host of Volunteers. Welcome to the show. We'll get back to that story, as they say, in just 1 minute. Welcome to the podcast.
And sorry, it's been a while since the last episode, but this one required a ton of research. We've literally listened to every radio broadcast from 1988. We've sifted through an entire season of newspapers. It's been a thing.
Now, we hope you agree it was worth it. We think it certainly was. And please, we love hearing from you guys. And one great way to contact us is through the website hostofvolunteers.com. Send us an email if you'd like to suggest a topic, and all of the feedback is greatly appreciated. And we've also received some great ideas already, right?
That's right.
So we're already working on our next episodes, thanks to you guys.
That's exactly right.
Now, this episode looks back to 1988.
And why in the world are we presenting a show about the 1988 football season? The 0-6 season?
Yeah, that reaction is why.
We're here, I hope, to reframe your memory of that season. Because, yes, that team began 0-6, but after this episode is finished, if we've done our jobs right, you'll, from this day forward, think of that season as the season we finished 5-0.
As the season that launched the decade of dominance. As the season that turned a bunch of young, talented, inexperienced kids with potential into a team of winners.
All right, so let's make our case, Ben.
Let's do it. Going into 1988, Tennessee was coming off a 10-win season. The first time that happened since 1972.
And Ben, we were picked in a preseason poll as 12th in the nation, so someone thought we probably were going to have a pretty good year.
Well, we had future All-American Keith DeLong on defense and senior quarterback Jeff Francis leading the offense.
And now the bad news. This was a very young team assigned to one of the toughest schedules I ever remember in a Tennessee football schedule, but certainly one of the toughest schedules in the country that year.
Well, the numbers proved you correct, sir, because the first four SEC opponents on the schedule would finish the SEC race in first, second, third, and fourth place in the final conference standings.
They call that a gauntlet.
I would say so. Jeff Francis had the quarterback spot locked up, but there was plenty of attention on the guys behind him. Sophomore Sterling Hinton and freshman Andy Kelly provided a glimpse into the future, but also a bit of insurance against injury. That changed for Hinton early in fall camp.
Jeff Francis was returning as a starting quarterback. I know I had to push him. That was my job, to push him to be All-American and one of the best in the nation. So I was pushing Jeff, you know, and I worked hard that summer. I was in the best shape of my life at that time. And then we go to practice, and of course, you know, it was a freak accident. I made a plant. The cut was so nice. I juked the whole defense, but my foot stayed one place, my body went the other, and that's when you heard a pow, and the whole team heard it, and I just fell. Fifth metatarsal break.
In the blink of an eye, depth at quarterback was the concern. Not only had we lost Sterling Hinton just months earlier, Randy Sanders had decided to give up football and return home to Morristown.
Longstanding associate AD Carmen Togano is a Tennessee legend.
No doubt.
He arrived at Tennessee in 1985 as the first hire of new AD Doug Dickey. Now, if there's ever a book called The Secret History of Tennessee Football, Carmen is the guy.
And I'm buying that book.
Absolutely. Make that two copies. Here's what he knows about Randy's return.
I had Randy's number. He was living with his mom and dad up there in Morristown. So I called him. Now, I don't know if you know Randy's father. Just a straightforward, salt-of-the-earth man. I mean, just you can tell because of who Randy is. You know?
Right.
He's the real deal. Answered the phone. I said, Mr. Sanders, they'd like Randy to come back and, you know, play this last year to help out.
Yeah.
And another long pause, and Mr. Sanders said, well, you know, fishing's a lot easier than playing football. And about an hour later, Randy called. And I went up and told Walt, and Walt got on the phone, and Randy agreed to come back. And I think Sterling's ankle breaking opened up the door in a funny way for Randy Sanders to start a great coaching career.
Right.
We have a sellout crowd of more than 82,000 for a giant of the season opener between Tennessee and Georgia.
The 1988 opener at Georgia was nationally televised on September the 3rd. And if you were watching that broadcast, you saw the first appearance ever of a young Chris Fowler working his first gig at ESPN.
Thanks very much. By Tennessee and Georgia, two states where college football is king. And the fans on both sides have waited 9 months for this opener. They're revved up. But they also have waited for some answers to some key questions. For Tennessee, is their defense finally physical enough to stop the ground attacks in the SEC?
But as usual, it was John Ward who provided the perfect setup.
And so here it is, ladies and gentlemen, the kickoff of 1988. It's football time in Tennessee.
Tennessee received the opening kickoff, and after a couple of positive yards through the air, they were forced to punt. Georgia's first possession would not last long.
Waiting, looking, throwing the ball down into the end zone. Intercepted. Tennessee at the 5, to the 10, to the 15. Gets a tackle, a block to the 20, to the 25, to the 30, to the 35, to the 40, to the 45, to the 50. Down to the 49-yard line. He is upended as Preston Warren, 6 feet, 186 sophomore, Knoxville Catholic, made the interception of the pass by Johnson.
Tennessee just couldn't get its offense on track, and it punted away again. This time, Georgia took advantage and scored on a Rodney Hampton TD. Tennessee answered with a field goal, and just before halftime, Reggie Cobb added 6.
Hand off tailback. Starts left, now to the 15-yard line, down to the 10, down to the 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Give him 6! Reginald Cobb! Touchdown! Big Allen!
Now it's 10-7 at the half, and any visions of an 0-6 start would be completely unfounded, especially when Brian Kimbrough sets up the Vols at the Georgia 16 late in the third quarter.
Hanson fumbles the football. There's a scramble for it at the 10-yard line. Make it the 15-yard line. Who's got it? Tennessee has recovered that ball. Hanson was popped. The ball squirted free, and Tennessee dive from the left side with Brian Kimbrough recovering the ball. The hit was applied by Keith DeLong, and so it turned around once more.
Ben, as Jeff Francis is looking over his offensive line and into the end zone on a first and goal from the one, it's 21-7. And it seems like we're about to take the lead, and who knows, maybe the game.
Francis to throw. Francis is sacked and fumbled, and Georgia has recovered. The sack by Giles, and he recovered the ball. And Georgia's defense turns this game around.
Oh, Francis was blindsided on the sack, and Georgia stops the drive cold and takes over at the 13.
So that moment, it was about to be a 24-21 Tennessee lead. Well, it ended up a 28-17 Georgia win, and it all turned on that one moment.
Just an unfortunate sequence. Touchdown opportunities came up short, not only from that goal line stand by Georgia. Here's a lasting image Carmen Togano remembers from that night.
Jeff Francis threw a touchdown pass to T.D. Woods, and we got called for holding. Kevin Simons, God bless him, God rest his soul, one of the greatest kids to ever come to this program, ever, from Miami. He started hitting his helmet really hard because he realized he jumped, he was holding, and they called the playback. Well, that turned the whole game around.
It wasn't to be, but Jeff Francis was sharp that night. 354 yards passing, and that yardage moved him into the number one spot on the Vols' career passing list with 3,984 yards. But it was of little solace to him. Also, what he remembers most about that night is something that happened on the plane headed back home to Knoxville.
I can remember talking to Carmen Togano on the plane on the way home. And he says, it's a bump in the road. He goes, now we play Duke next week. He goes, we lose to Duke next week. That's like a 20-car pileup on I-40. Oh. And sure enough, after we lost to Duke, I'm like, we got a 20-car pileup on I-40.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That was like a little bit, oh, we're not very good.
But little did you know, you were playing against a coach that was ultimately redesign the SEC offensive playbook.
Of course, you were speaking of Steve Spurrier, who was coaching Duke that night in 1988.
I was. It was a bad night, and as Carmen predicted, that was not just a bump in the road.
Only Preston Warren offered up a highlight in
throw.
The first
good
half.
Good protection. Pass down and out is intercepted. Tennessee at the 25, to the 20, to the 15, to the 10, to the 5. Give him 6. Preston Warren! Preston Warren returns a pass interception, 28 yards. And so Warren with his second interception, just a Herculean play.
It was Herculean, Ben. who ends a touchdown call with Herculean?
John Ward.
That's who. I do love Mike Strange. I love his style. He was writing quite a bit about this 1988 season. And in his article the next morning, after the second loss, he says, quote, the University of Tennessee, the team with no defense a week ago at Georgia, added a new element Saturday night, no offense. Duke 31, Tennessee 26.
That's tough.
Yes.
Now, at this point, the Vols had lost the first two games, but no need to panic, right? Well, let's go back to your boy Mike Strange for his game three story.
So game three. Yes, it was as one-sided as the score. Ninth-ranked Louisiana State dominated the line of scrimmage, the statistics, and the scoreboard in a 34-9 thrashing of helpless Tennessee.
That really hurts. Thanks a lot, Mike. At this point, Tennessee is 0-3 and headed to Auburn. Not since 1962 has Tennessee begun a season 0-4.
I would assume the pressure was on.
Well, bad seasons have happened before 1988, but there was a new factor entering the scene about this time that did not help matters much. Here's voice of the Titans and former Volnet staffer Mike Keith to explain.
Knoxville's first ever daily talk show that lives until this day. Sports Talk began on September 1, 1988. Alan Williams was the host. The only other talk avenue, Rush Limbaugh wasn't even on at that time.
Yep.
The only other talk avenue was football finals after games. And that could get heated.
Yeah.
But people were passionate after the result had just happened. This was different because this was sustained. I produced that show for Alan Williams. And so in hearing the people on a daily basis, even for just an hour a day,
yeah,
the frustration was really at an incredible level. And to hear people and their just utter disdain in what was year 12 for John Majors, it was a different vibe.
Yeah.
And that's when Coach Majors would eventually come with the comments about talk shows being the legions of the miserable. And you did understand over a period of time that the majority of the people who would be motivated to call were the ones who were the most distraught. If things are going well, nobody calls.
Right.
And very rarely do people call when things are going badly and go, hey, everybody just calm down. you get the people who are most upset who phone at that point, and that's what happened.
But Mike and Alan Williams and WIVK were not the only ones wading into the waters of talk radio. In 1988, the Vol Network was still in its infancy of the Kickoff Call-In Show.
Tennessee football is on the air, beginning with the Kickoff Call-In Show. We invite you to call in now and talk football with John Ward, Bill Anderson, and Randy Smith of the Vol Network, along with special guests, the Kickoff Call-In Show.
Seemed like a great idea, though there were some hiccups.
That's how you're on the air. Hello? Hello?
Is he gone?
Yes, he's gone, but well, that's who he did say.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, let's take another caller now. Hi, you're on the air. Hello?
And not everyone understood the purpose of the show.
Hello, you're on the Vol Network.
Yes, I was wondering if you could intercom something to my mom and dad there in the crowd there.
Intercom something.
At the Ramada Inn.
At the Ramada Inn.
I guess John Ward didn't know he was going to be an answering machine.
No. Guy missed the point of the call-in show, I think. But
the crew soldiered on, yep. And in 1988, as the losses piled up, the tone of the callers expressed much more concern.
They were angry.
Yeah.
And I wonder why Tennessee, with Johnny Majors having a winning percentage of 64%, why they can keep a man like that.
We do need a coaching change. I was all for Johnny Majors coming back to Tennessee and have been a major fan, but I don't know if any other school would put up with what we put up with in the last, 12 years he's been there, because we've been still playing mediocre football and not getting the athletes we should be getting.
But our coaches are just not coming through with their end of it. I'll hang up and listen to what you say about that.
And Ben, finally, here is a call that had it all figured out.
Thank goodness.
I think back when they used to keep all the athletes in the stadium. It's sort of like a dungeon. And I think what happened was we had some sort of a fungus growing down there. And then when they built that big new place for them and they carried their equipment over there, they took it over there with them. And I think it's some sort of a brain fungus or something. Because I think UT's got a program that... there's no reason for UT to not do any better than what it's been doing.
Okay, Mr. Schwartz, thank you for the call. We have a young man who lived in that stadium for some years, and he...
If you've been wondering what's wrong with me, John, maybe we finally found out. I've got a fungus of the brain.
So at least Anderson admitted it, I guess. And as if the fans on the radio were not expressing that frustration clearly enough, there were other people who were doing more than just talk.
He's making a name for himself by sitting on top of a billboard. It's located on Division Avenue near Interstate 265. Duncan Stewart has said he's not coming down off that billboard until Tennessee wins its first football game this year. Duncan, how's the weather on the billboard, my friend?
You know, we're up here because we want to get some people rallied behind the Vols. There's been a lot of disunity among Vol fans in our call-in show here on WSIX, and we decided to do something rather dramatic. Let me tell you, at 40 feet, this is dramatic.
Now, how long have you been up there?
I've been up here since Tuesday morning at 5 o'clock.
Well, Duncan, we thank you for being with us today. And
Bill Anderson, I'm glad to... When we were driving over, we were talking about Duncan because we had viewed driving over from LaGrange, Georgia to Auburn, where the team stayed at LaGrange, which is probably 45 minutes from here. And Bill Anderson said, well, the way things are going, what do you say, Bill?
Well, I don't want to be negative. I'm sure Duncan wanted to come down off of that sign as soon as possible, but I just wondered if you took any cold weather gear up there with you.
I've got plenty of foul weather gear, cold weather gear. I'm ready for the siege.
I hope they had that cold weather gear. Anderson with the truth, as always. Now, he seemed to know just how bad things might get.
Yeah.
But it's amazing. Duncan Stewart did his part, but so too, as usual, did our fans. How many do you suppose showed up at Auburn to support this 0-3 team?
It had to be 1,000, I guess.
10,000 fans.
Of course 10,000 showed up.
The best fans, for sure.
Now being pressured. Black is back. Coming from the outside, big Charles McRae battling through the blocker, and McRae gets to him and throws him for the loss. That's the first sack for Charles McRae, his fifth tackle of the year.
By year's end, Charles McRae would be on the other side of the line. Now, speaking of that side, the thin ranks kept getting thinner.
Tennessee has an injured player, and in the offensive line, something Tennessee can ill afford with Davis, Myslinski, and Beard already hurting. And this is Ray Robinson, the 6'3", 280 senior from Woodbury, Tennessee, who was injured on the play.
This drive, more than any other, was such a microcosm of 1988. Tennessee was driving and truly taking it to the SEC's top defense. They get all the way to the goal line. And out with injury goes one of the steadiest linemen on the team, the guy who snaps the ball to Jeff Francis.
First of all, Ray Robinson came here with a wife and a daughter. The daughter right now is a physician. They're a great family. Two daughters and a son. He fought through adversity in 1984. Fought through adversity, multiple knee surgeries.
Yeah.
Couldn't walk.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's like today, but he couldn't walk back then.
Yeah. Right.
But he refused to let down his teammates.
Mm-hmm.
And he could have cashed it in and still got a medical scholarship.
Yeah.
Wouldn't do it. Would not take a medical scholarship.
Amazing.
I remember it was either Tim or Mike made a statement to me that he was playing with more pain than any player they'd ever been around.
Wow.
He couldn't get off the training table and walk out of the training room, but he went out and practiced.
Ben, you're starting to get a sense of this team.
Yeah.
Yeah, why they don't deserve that 0-6 label, why they're so much more important to Big Orange Country than we might remember. Anyway, Ray goes out, and who comes in?
So now Tennessee has four offensive linemen who are unable to play. Davis, Myslinski, Beard, and Robinson. John Fisher, freshman from Milan, Tennessee, will be in there at the pivot for Tennessee, 6'4", 260.
John Fisher would be a great, great lineman. But I don't think anybody wanted a freshman's first action ever to be snapping the ball to Francis on the road at Auburn. And then after one play...
Another volunteer player injured on this play. And... on three plays, Tennessee has lost two more offensive linemen, as this time being held to the sideline, Phil Stewart.
Phil Stewart, the only other veteran on the line. Carmen remembers poor Jeff Francis's dilemma.
And he's in the huddle, and Reggie Cobb told me he looked over at Jeff. And he stood up, he looked over the offensive lineman, and he saw the four guys from Auburn with their hands on their hip. And Reggie looked up at Jeff, and he said, I think we're in trouble. And Jeff said, I'm not sure of our guys' names. He said, I'm not sure who's blocking for you, Reg.
Right. When I can remember looking at my offensive line and a bunch of freshmen just wide-eyed, kind of like I was 2 years earlier,
yeah.
And kind of like this is a little bigger moment for him.
Oh, yeah.
And then looking over Tracy Rocker and Benji Rowland and a bunch of those dudes, and they were dudes now, with their hands on their hips. And I can remember thinking, going, it's going to be a long day.
Now, unsurprisingly, the drive stalled out, but Tennessee did get on the board to take the lead.
The kick by McCallum is end over ending its way. Good! And Tennessee has the lead. 74 yards, 13 plays, and Tennessee leads Auburn by a score of 3-0.
Tennessee's problem wasn't moving the ball. It was getting the ball into the end zone. But the Vols did go into the halftime locker room with confidence, down only 10-6.
Is good! And Tennessee's on the scoreboard with another field goal, cutting the margin to 4 points. It's Auburn 10, Tennessee 6, with 7 seconds left to go in the first half of the game.
Out of the locker room, hopes were high. But sadly, Mike Strange is back again for another dose of reality.
Here's what he had to say the next morning. Quote, 1 minute, there was a University of Tennessee football team full of confidence and hope. Then, faster than you can say 0-4, there was nothing left to do but notify the next of kin.
Ouch.
Whoa! Ben, what I couldn't get over was that in a span of 6 minutes and 24 seconds, Tennessee would lose three fumbles, and all three of those would turn into Auburn touchdowns.
The team that makes the fewest mistakes will win, indeed.
Yep.
Johnny Majors summed it up in the locker room after the Auburn game.
If somebody's giving effort and giving all they got, I'm not going to kick them in the teeth figuratively, and I'm not going to browbeat them figuratively, because that's not what the game's all about. But we do have a patchwork offensive line. I'll say this, if anybody can do it, Phil Fulmer will get the most out of an offensive line that can humanly be done. He is as fine a person as I've ever seen in college football. He's just one of the finest football coaches in America, and he's had outstanding offensive line. So we've got an outstanding coach to do that, I'll tell you that right now. And he's got a real challenge ahead of him, and I've got a real challenge.
Speaking of Philip Fulmer, here he is, talking about what it was like in that offensive line meeting room in 1988.
Yeah, well, during that first part of the season, you're looking for a hole to crawl in. You know, with everybody else, it was so tough because of the injuries. You know, we were youthful in some areas anyway, and then you got two choices. You know, you either bear down and go on, or you quit. And quitting really wasn't an option. You know, and we knew it was out there. We just didn't know when it was going to happen.
The Monday after the Auburn game, as we're sitting 0-4, Johnny Majors approached the media that was gathered at practice, and he pointed to the east, Ben. What he said to them was the sun still came up over there this morning.
But then Coach Majors was presented with the results of a poll conducted by the Chattanooga Times. This poll indicated that 80% were dissatisfied with Majors, offensive coordinator Walt Harris, and defensive coordinator Ken Donahue. Coach Major's response, we didn't take any polls in 1985 and 1987. I wasn't interested in them then. I'm not interested in them now. I'll stick to my business of doing what I can for this team.
You could absolutely hear him saying that. I'll stick to my business.
Yeah. That guy wasn't going to be swayed by a poll, and Jeff Francis remembers the steady leadership on that staff.
Yep.
I got to give Coach Majors and all the guys in the staff a lot of credit. You know, Coach Majors, especially being a senior quarterback that year, Coach Majors could have easily said, we're rebuilding. Mm-hmm. But I've always appreciated his loyalty to me. But Coach Majors did a great job, and it was before social media stuff, but he always talked about closing ranks and not worrying about what everyone says and just trying to get better. And I think he did a great job of that.
The loss to Auburn was kind of a call to arms for one more fan, Ben. He headed skyward, and his name was Joe Grant. He was in Wartburg, and he heard about Duncan Stewart climbing up on the billboard, and now he decided it was time for him to do something too. Joe Grant said he did it because he wanted to show that East Tennessee supports the Vols also. So he climbed atop the Village Martin Deli in Wartburg, and he was hoping to bring a brighter future to Big Orange Country.
Let's take a break while I change the ribbon on my typewriter.
good idea.
At BTS, we service what we sell. Panasonic, Xerox, Royal typewriters, facsimile machines, calculators, and computers. Let our factory-trained technicians handle your typewriter service needs, including IBM. Call professional typewriter service at 588-9823. At PTS, service is our name.
Ben, I know that's funny and everything, but I actually remember in 1988 when I was upgraded to an IBM Selectric typewriter. That, for Barry Rice, was a great day.
I would say John Ward had similar feelings because he had a new typewriter for every year over the past 30 years and was still purchasing them to his final days.
That couldn't have been easy to find them.
No, definitely not.
Anyway, now we're 0-4, and it's October. And if you're still wondering why we've picked this topic...
And I'm sure some of you are.
Yeah, and having flashbacks, please stick with us. Because it's going to get a little worse before it gets better. In fact, the first game in October took us to 0-5, losing to Washington State. Ben, I'll be darned if I'm going to relive the Washington State game on this podcast because it was that bad. But I did want to play one play, a play that I remember clearly watching live and realizing at that moment, sometimes the football gods are just not on your side.
Back to throw. Fan comes wide open. Pass complete. 35 up to the 40, to the 45, to the 50, down to the Tennessee 45, to the 40. He's hit, fumbles the ball, picks it up on the skip, carries the ball to the 15, to the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Washington State!
You've got to be kidding me. The ball was fumbled during the run.
Yep.
It bounced forward several yards.
Oh, yeah.
And bounced into the runner's arms, who never broke stride.
Ben, that's what I'm talking about. I couldn't believe I had just seen what I had just seen, and then you just shrug your shoulders and go, that's just the way it is.
That's 1988.
Yeah.
But there was one or two bright spots for the Vols that day.
Gets a block out to the outside to the 20, to the 25, to the 30, to the 35, to the 40, to the 45, to the 50, to the 45, to the 40, 35, 30. Is there a flag on the field? No. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Give him 6. Touchdown, Thomas Woods, 83 yards.
0-5 marked the worst start in school history. Now, Joe Grant and Wartburg literally cried up on top of the Village Martin Deli.
Meanwhile, Duncan Stewart settled in along the Nashville Interstate for a little longer, too. There would be an open date before the Vols would play Alabama. But incredibly, tailback Keith Davis visited Stewart on the billboard on Sunday of the off week when he briefly returned home to Nashville.
That's incredible.
It's very nice of him to do. It really is the least he could do.
Now, that two-week break created an opportunity for Johnny Majors to make big changes. Here's Mike Keith, who was still manning the producer's chair at the new thing they're calling talk radio.
And everyone's thinking, what in the world is going on? And so was all these things in retrospect that had come together, massive injuries, playing teams at the best they would be for a period of time, and totally losing your confidence. And so after those five games, Johnny Majors was not going to wait around. He makes a change at defensive coordinator. No one thought that had anything to do with the program that Ken Donahue had done anything wrong.
Right.
He was still a great coach.
Right.
But John Majors felt like he needed to shake things up. And it turned out he was right.
And here's Doug Matthews.
I'll never forget the night after Washington State. We're open the next Saturday, so we were not going to have – we were going to take that Sunday off.
Yeah.
So I'm at home, I don't know, 10:30, 11 o'clock. The phone rings. No cell phone back then.
Yeah.
Pick up phone. It's Coach Majors. Doug. Yes, sir. I need to see you in my office tomorrow at 7:30. Yes, sir. He hangs up the phone. So my wife's sitting over there, and she says, is that Coach Majors? I said, yeah. And I said, what do you want? He said, he wants to see me tomorrow at 7:30. She said, you think he's going to fire you? And I said, I hope to hell he fires me because I'm tired of this. So anyway, go in, and he tells me that, hey, I'm going to make a change with Ken. And Barry, the thing that, you know, the emotional part of this thing at that time was this. I loved Ken Donahue.
Oh, yeah.
I respected Ken Donahue. Everybody did.
Yeah.
And, you know, to think that, you know, I'm going to be going over there and certainly not taking his place. You don't do that. But Coach wanted his change on it. So I move over.
The headline from Thursday, October 6th, 1988. Majors moves to halt record losing streak. Said Majors, "Sometimes change is necessary even if it's wrong. We hope this change will be for the betterment." Here's Jeff Francis.
And I think Coach Matthews, just hindsight, I think made things a lot simpler. It's kind of crazy. Doug Matthews in 85, Coach Donahue in 85 was a genius. I mean, we were blitzing, doing all kinds of stuff. It was all working.
Right.
Boy, a couple years later, that was not at all the case. I think Coach Matthews switched to 4-3. We got much simpler on defense and let guys play a lot faster. And that, I think, helped a lot.
Here's Matthews on the plan.
We move Kevin Steele from secondary to linebackers.
Yeah.
We move Bumpus from linebackers to defensive line, and I coach the secondary. Well, at that particular time, they were running a 3-4. I didn't know anything about the three-man front. So we actually switched completely from the three-man front to the four-man front. We took the guy that was playing nose guard, Charles McCray, and moved him to offense. And to this day, I see Charles quite often. Charles was crushed. That he was going to move off. But we were going to get smaller and quicker.
Right.
Marion Hobby and Tracy Hayworth. We were going to get quicker, you know. And Charles was – he didn't like me for quite a while. Oh. Of course, he moves over to offensive tackle.
Yeah.
Makes All-American.
Yeah.
Signs a big pro contract. But anyway, it was a good move. It worked out very well. So we went in and we changed all of our calls and all of that.
Yeah.
And really went out and played Alabama with about two defenses. We're going to play a couple of different four-man front looks.
Yeah.
We're going to play zone coverage instead of man. Now, we had an off week, by the way, to kind of get all that in.
The players were ready for a change, too. Here's Preston Warren.
I will tell you, there was a lot of meetings without coaches in the room.
Yeah.
As teammates and as a football team, we've got to understand a coach is not going to take a snap. So we've got to start to control our own destiny.
Yeah.
And I think when we recognize that this is about us.
Yeah.
You saw a change. We got it changed very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And we've never looked back.
Mm-hmm.
Carmen remembers that week and those players too.
Jeff, Phil Stewart, some of the seniors, they had a lot of meetings.
Yeah.
They met. They sat in the cafeteria at Gibbs.
Yeah.
They sat in the lobby of Gibbs, and you'd look and you'd see they were just the older guys sitting there.
Yeah.
And those kids really rallied together, like you said. And I think it's the brotherhood, it's the Tennessee factor, it's the legacy of not being a part of a team that threw in the towel, being a part of a team that fought through some adversity.
Yep.
And they had that legacy. Here we are talking about it. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's what it was.
After the open week, it was the third Saturday in October, Tennessee versus Alabama in Neyland Stadium. And the changes made, well, they had an impact.
They did. But first, speaking of changes, Ben, that was the day that the brand new University of Tennessee logo was unveiled, midfield in all its glory. If you remember the U and the T kind of interlocking with the outline of the state of Tennessee above the logo. First time we ever saw that was right there on the field that day.
And a logo I still am a fan of.
Big time.
Now being pursued, and he is knocked down on a sack. Mark Moore.
The pitch will go to the tailback, tries the left side of the line, gets to the corner, and then he is hit and dropped. He's thrown down for no gain by Jeremy Lincoln. And here comes Tennessee on a blitz. The pitch goes to Hill at the corner, and Hill makes it out to the 9-yard line, but he's far short of the first down as Ernest Fields, the freshman from Milan, Tennessee, is in there to make the tackle. The blitz pitch will go to Hill. Hill to the right side will reverse, hands it off. Bang! Good was just grilled for a loss. The field goal try is blocked. Tennessee goes racing after the ball, and the Volunteers pick it up at the 30, to the 35, to the 40, to the 44-yard line goes Tennessee as the block was made by Preston Warren. Punt blocked. Tennessee blocks it. It goes down and through the end zone for a safety. It was Warren and Lincoln.
A lot of enthusiasm on this defensive unit today, John.
Here comes the blitz pass across the middle. It's complete for the first down, then fumbled, then recovered by the Big Orange. The fake reverse, and Tennessee is not faked at all.
The give goes to Hill. Hill then was going to hand the ball off to Pierre Goud, but Cedric Klein was right there controlling, containing, and then tackling him. And so the Tennessee fans come alive cheering the defense. It will be fourth down and 7 yards to go.
The defense up there giving the different looks, faking the blitz, doing those things, and then coming at it. You can see the Alabama offensive lineman's head turning to each other, trying to check off on their blocking assignments. Got them pretty confused.
This was a different team, a more spirited team, faster, quicker, confident. But it wasn't enough on this particular day, even though there were glimmers of hope.
Francis looking back, they shift into a four-man front. Here comes the pressure from the outside, pass into the end zone. Touchdown, Tennessee! The pass is thrown to Thomas Woods. TD, and it's 14-6. Pass down into the end zone is touchdown, Tennessee! Complete to Alvin Harper. Harper goes up over the defender and pulls down the TD score, and Tennessee is on the board with 18 points. Undoubtedly, Tennessee will go for two. Still 13 more seconds drive to go in the football
the
game.
The ball split to running back.
Quarterback is Francis. Francis, handoff, right side, pounding, driving, fighting. Give it to him. Driving in for 2 points, Reggie Cobb of the Volunteers. As Cobb knocks in the extra point of the two-point try.
Losing to the Tide assured the Vols of a losing season, its first in 8 years. Now here's Mike Keith.
Doug Matthews did a whale of a job with the defense, but more so, it was just pieces came back together. The team started to gain confidence. The Vols lose to an average Alabama team in a game they could have won.
Yep.
Keith DeLong played one of the really great Tennessee performances against Alabama that I've ever seen. He's one of the greats. He and his father are two of the all-time greats of the last 55, 60 years, and Keith is certainly in that conversation.
And back to throw Sutton, but he is sacked by the blitzer, Keith DeLong. Long pass downfield, intercepted Tennessee at the 20. Back to the 15, back to the 13-yard line comes Keith DeLong. Tennessee gets penetration, and throwing William Kent for a loss is Keith DeLong. DeLong comes absolutely free, running randomly from his linebacker position. He sees the gap, and he throws him for a loss back to the 7-yard line.
And those seniors stuck together. Kevin Simon, Jeff Francis, Keith DeLong. Mm-hmm. Those were the leaders of that team. Charles Kimbrough, Phil Stewart.
Yep.
Okay. And those guys kept it together, and we could have really collapsed, but they didn't.
Ben, here's a side note that blew me away in doing the research. The night of the Tennessee-Alabama game in 1988, you probably went home, you probably turned on your television, you watched the World Series, and that was the famous night when Kirk Gibson hit a home run. And
I don't believe what I just saw was the call by Jack Buck.
There you go.
Unbelievable! A home run for Gibson, and the Dodgers have won the game 5-4. I don't believe what I just saw. I don't believe.
Like Kirk Gibson, these guys drew a line in the sand and said, "If it's to be, it's up to me." Here's Preston Warren on who they look to.
Because once again, we didn't have just enormous superstars. There wasn't anybody really on our team that's going to take over a game and go win it for you. You know, the example I give you, Al Wilson came. Al Wilson don't exist all the time.
Right.
Okay. Al Wilson could go win you a football game.
Right, right.
That just didn't exist during that time frame. So we, as teammates, once again, the personality said, hey, we've got to step up, and we've all got to make this happen.
Yeah.
We don't have a choice.
Yeah.
So we made that choice to all step up and understand that off the field and on the field, we've got to be winners. You've got to be brash. You've got to have swag. You've got to have confidence. And you've got to be able to deliver.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's – we had a decision to make. You want to continue to go 0-6 or be mediocre? You ask anybody that. Adam Harper's not. Carl Pickens not. I'm not.
Yeah.
So you got a decision to go win, and you got to go do your job.
Also, Ben, the Vol Network's Randy Smith, I think, summarized the brutal six-game stretch pretty well here.
But let's look at the first six games Tennessee has played. The opposition is 27-8. Georgia's 5-1. Duke is 5-1. LSU 4-2. Auburn 5-1. Washington State 4-2. And Alabama 4-1. That's a 77% winning percentage there. And Tennessee 0-6. And with 62 of 88 some odd roster players being freshmen and sophomores, that's tough. That really is.
That week, Joe Grant's doctor ordered him to come down from the rooftop in Wartburg because of the mental stress and the difficulty he had breathing. Bless his heart. Said Grant, "I'm not. I've stuck it out this long." He was still determined to show support for his team. "This is something I have to finish. I'm a true fan, by gosh." I'll say.
Ben, the true fans were about to be rewarded for their devotion, not just to end 1988, but to launch the Tennessee Vols on a streak to never be forgotten. But that streak would begin in Memphis.
I'll tell you when it changed. I remember like it was yesterday. Yeah. We went down to Memphis. And we were at the time 0-6. Went down to Memphis, and they hadn't beaten us, I think, ever, maybe. I don't think.
No, they have not.
They're right at the time. And they had a running back. His name was Xavier Crawford.
Mm-hmm.
They called him the X-Man. And he talked a little bit that week about fresh meat and Tennessee's coming to town. They're wounded and, you know, this is our chance. And, you know, I want to get so many yards. I can't remember exactly, but it made really good locker room material. Well, you can look this up. First play of the game, they ran old Xavier Crawford off tackle. And Keith DeLong lit him up. Knocked his helmet off.
Yeah.
Now, today, you'd have to leave the field when your helmet came off.
Right.
He left the field and didn't come back.
It was that kind of game, a grudge match. And Jeff Francis was instantly holding a grudge, too.
Talk about ticking you off. I can remember going to Memphis. It was our first win.
Yeah.
And in warmups. And I can remember they got on the PA. There's a cheerleader or something on the PA before the game. "Hey, we're going to kick some Vol ass." And I was, I just remember like going, "That is just not cool." And I can remember like, there's a quarterback. You kind of try to stay pretty strong. I was hacked off.
Oh, yeah.
And I think everyone else was. So that was kind of a game that kind of turned for us.
And before we get into the great John Ward play-by-play action, it's worth mentioning, and John does so next, that the fans were still traveling and supporting their Vols.
Of course.
Show me any other team in college football whose fan base would show up in such numbers to support an 0-6 team.
Only this one.
They're the best.
Yeah, yeah.
The tradition of Tennessee fans following the Vols wherever they go continues. In fact, the number of Vol fans is even larger than normal at this beautiful stadium, hoping that welcoming the Big R's to West Tennessee might very well be the start of what they might call a Tennessee turnaround. So as Tennessee prepares to race onto the field with the orange and white Shakers filling the stands across the way, it's football time in Tennessee. Francis off play action to throw, gets some pressure, pass across the middle, complete. It's pulled down by Alvin Harper, who makes the catch at the state 32 and noses the ball down to the 30-yard line, where he's tackled by Scott Rumley. Tennessee continuing to go, Bill, with what sometimes we call the hitch and go, but Tennessee really is not gone. They're just hitching.
They just keep John, you got that right. I've never seen them go. A lot of hitches, but no goes.
The give is to Cobb running up the middle. Cobb momentarily breaks open. He has the ball at the 25. He's at the 20. Cobb to the 15. Cobb to the 10. Cobb to the 7-yard line. Knocked down by Dubose. First down goal, Tennessee. They run it back to the near side. No, it's Francis dropping into the end zone. Give him six. Touchdown, Von Reed. Tennessee scores 7 points in its second possession. 7 points is more than Tennessee has scored in the first period all six games previously combined. Snap down. The kick by McCollum is up. It is wobbling downfield, and it is good. There's timeout on the field with a score. Tennessee 10, Memphis State nothing.
It wasn't easy, Ben. It was absolutely a fight. In fact, Memphis State marched right back to tie the score at 10-10. But then a guy who had an enormous heart joined Jeff Francis in the backfield and he refused to lose.
Handoff Thompson, cuts to the outside, has the ball at the 15, has the ball at the 10. His horse call it ridden down at the 6-yard line. Eddie Moore made the saving tackle. Quickness, darting play, and big block Greg Embler. Francis. Handoff, there's Thompson diving straight ahead. No, keeping the ball, twisting, turning, fighting. Give it to him. Who was it? Somebody scored for Tennessee, I think, Jeff Francis. Francis faked the give. I thought he might have given it off to the wingback Davis, but instead it was Francis keeping the ball, fooling me, obviously. That's not too tough. But from the Tennessee perspective, fooling the Memphis State defenders, Bill Anderson, and he battles in to score. The ball's again power eye set. Handoff goes to Francis faking, rolling to the near side, end zone pass, give him six. Touchdown, Nathan Middlebrook. Francis strings it out, and as he comes wandering to the right side, popping wide open was Middlebrook, and Francis just flips the ball to the tight end for the TD. Jones on play action, back to throw. Jones is going to be sacked, fumbles the ball, scramble for it. Who's got it? It's still bounding around. Who has it? I'll tell you who has it. The big white recovers it as Sean Walker makes the recovery after the hit from behind on quarterback Jones is applied by Marion Hobby. Francis pitch with the ball, turning the right side. Tony Thompson at the 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Give it to him. Touchdown, Tennessee. Tennessee, which missed the extra point earlier, will probably go for two in this situation. Francis brings his team to the line in the I formation. Single wide receiver right. Tony Thompson now the tailback. As the give goes to Thompson, Thompson into the center, darts outside, spins, turns, dives, give him two. Here comes the blitz. There's the give to Thompson. Breaks it to the 20. Down to the 15. Darts to the 10. Spins to the 5. Cuts to the 3. Is knocked down at the 3-yard line. Francis picked up the blitz. And as he gave it off to Thompson, he just ran by the blitzing linebackers. It was wide open. And then he dashes downfield before finally Young made the tackle. But not until Tony Thompson has given Tennessee the ball. First down, goal to go at the 3-yard line. Tennessee leading by a score of 31-17 with 4 minutes and 54 seconds to go. Come to the line with a power eye set. The wing to the left. They're going back with Francis pitching. Here's the same pitch to Thompson around the right side. 3, 2, 1. Give him six. Touchdown, Tony Thompson. Still, as the Volunteers are 4 minutes and 22 seconds away from a victory in October.
At last, Duncan Stewart, you can come on down, I think.
Not yet. And Joe Grant as well, who's up in Wartburg. He's been up about 3 weeks or four. Here's the snap. Francis goes to one knee. The clock is down to 27 seconds. They will mark the ball and start the clock. And that, in all probability, will be the final play of this football game. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Tennessee beats Memphis State. Back in 60 seconds after telling you the final score, the Volunteers 38, the Tigers 25.
Do you remember anything more about the Memphis State game? And in particular, I want to talk about, you could hear it in the locker room in the post game, but there was also mention of it in the paper, the jubilation after the Memphis State game.
Yeah, it was jubilee, but it was just relief. I mean, it was, you know, you get tired of getting beaten down. And just, you know, it's when things go bad, it's hard to get over that, and it's hard to win a football game.
Yeah.
Tennessee wins for the first time this 1988 college season today. Let's go back now to Liberty Bowl Stadium in the Tennessee locker room. For the first time, a jubilant Tennessee locker room. Here's Bob Kessler.
Jeff, the offense clicked. You are in sync and look a lot better today.
I felt good. This whole year we've been struggling. Don't feel like we've really been playing up to our capabilities and haven't executed as well as we can. And today, hey, the offensive line took charge of the game, and you can run the ball like we could today. Makes everything so much easier.
Jeff, you look like you're standing a little bit taller today. Congratulations on the first one.
It's about time. And whoever's on any buildings anywhere, you come on down.
Finally got that guy off the billboard. It was in Nashville.
We were going to talk about that guy.
Yeah.
In fact, about 500 people clustered around the Village Martin Deli in their cars, honked their horns, and cheered Joe Grant as he descended its rooftop vigil.
Bravo, Wartburg. Bravo.
They began arriving in the middle of the fourth quarter, and once on the ground, he was doused in champagne.
I don't believe anybody could be any more excited than I am. I've just gotten champagne poured all over me. People are standing down here a mile deep, blowing their horns. It's a happy celebration in Morgan County. And for the Vol affiliate station, WGTG and WECO.
That's great. Joe, tell me something. How many days were you actually on the rooftop up there?
I came up here September 25th.
So that means that you were up there 28 days?
That's right.
Exactly 4 weeks.
Close to it.
Joe, one other question. A lot of people were worried about your health. How are you feeling right now?
Well, I'm going home to take about a 4-hour bath and a 5-hour shower. Then I'm going to sleep for about 3 days, but other than that, I feel pretty good. I really do.
Okay, Joe, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, buddy.
All right.
Big orange.
And Ben, to the west of Neyland Stadium in Nashville, another fan was climbing off his billboard.
Hey, Randy, it was worth it. We got a lot of goodwill. We've got a lot of great Nashville ball fans, as you can probably hear in the background down there.
Right.
And I'm just glad that Tennessee Vols got a win and those kids can hold their heads high and let's go on and win the state championship and beat the heck out of Vanderbilt.
Okay.
Speaking of young guys, there were two really young guys on that team that season that we never saw. Carl Pickens and Chuck Webb were two of the best players I've ever seen, and they both were sitting out as red shirts.
Makes you wonder, doesn't it?
It makes you wonder. But people like the injured Sterling Hinton got a close look at them and noticed what they were capable of.
As they were redshirting, you know, and I'm coming back from an injury, I'm practicing with these guys every day. So I know what they got. I know. And Pick, you know, Pick and Jump can jump. I mean, Pick's, I mean, it goes without saying now, but nobody knew back then.
Right.
But I knew what those guys had because I practiced with them.
Yeah. Right. And actually, to that point, Chuck Webb remembers that season and his role.
The freshmen made their own fun in practice. Everybody there, I mean, we had like Pickens, Clemens McCroskey, Tracy Smith. We went at the defense. I mean, Keith DeLong came in the locker room one time and told us to take it easy on him. And that's a true story. So we went hard. We wanted to win. And every day, like, we grew because we went to film. We learned more. We just prepared ourselves to get on the field. When I got here, I mean, in each freshman that comes here, they think I was the man in high school. I'm going to come up here and take over and things like that. So when I got here, I already knew that it was two men here. So that wasn't my thought. My thought was, how can I get out there? How can I get better? And how can I win and help my team in any way possible?
Chuck would help the team in 1989, but in 1988, he soaked up the knowledge he got from his buddy, Reggie Cobb.
Well, he taught me, like, so many different things about the game and watching him play, his smoothness, how he glided through the hole, like, just different things and his mental preparation. Like, a lot of people don't know about Reggie. Like, Reggie was prepared before the game was played. When he came out, like, he knew what hole he was going to go to. He knew what guy he was going to pick on the defense. And then, like, people watching it didn't see that. Like, it, you know, didn't look at it as a running back. And I was like, man, Reggie is just picking on that linebacker, that DN or whatever. And he's spinning on him or he's stiff-arming. And when he broke against Auburn, like, he set that up 3 plays before. So, and a lot of people didn't see that. If you go back and watch the film, like, watch 3 plays before that. Reggie set that run up right then. It was beautiful.
And both of those guys were going to be in the same backfield soon enough.
I can't wait.
And besides, it was just a different era for freshmen back then. Carl Pickens was fine with his role.
No, I was glad to sit, to be honest with you, because I didn't know what I was doing.
Okay.
I had no idea about the offense, you know. It took me a while to learn exactly what to do and then with all the adjustments. So I could play a little bit, you know, but I need to be comfortable. I need to know exactly what I'm doing at all times, especially on the field with all the adjustments and everything. And plus, like I said, the guys were older than me, and they were better than me. So I couldn't – I can't just take somebody's spot just because, you know, I'm on scholarship. So it worked out the way it was supposed to.
Now, Tennessee is finally in the win column with four games to go. Next up, Boston College.
Back to throw as the penalty marker is down. Pass intercepted. Tennessee at the 30. 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown. Warren scores. Warren makes the interception and races down the east sideline for what would be a touchdown, except there's a penalty on the play. It will be penalty against Boston College. It has been declined. Give him 6.
Thank goodness for Preston Warren. On this windy day, every point will be desperately needed. Boston College tied the score at 7 and was driving to go ahead. But Preston Warren was having a day.
This is Power faking, passing down into the end zone. Intercepted. Tennessee at the 5. Out to the 7, out to the 9 comes Preston Warren. The ball was deflected. Warren was Johnny on the spot. Should we say Preston on the spot? And Preston Warren has his third interception in this game.
Now, this was an ugly day. The weather saw wind, rain, sunshine, and hail.
I assume they canceled or postponed the game.
Oh, no, I'm sure it went on a big delay, and we sat there for hours.
Play on. Watch out for the lightning.
Needless to say, it made field goal attempts an adventure. But this time, Chip McCollum was up to the challenge.
It appears to me he's kicking into the wind. So this will be a difficult try by McCollum. The kick is up by McCollum. He hits it well, end over ending its way downfield, and that kick is good.
It was 10-7 with time running out for Boston College.
A long pass downfield is complete by Boston College to the 25, to the 20, to the 15, to the 10. It is touchdown, Marcus Cherry. Boston College Power just throws as far as he could. Tennessee had double coverage on the receiver, but Cherry comes out with the ball. There's a penalty marker. There's a penalty marker down on the field. There is a penalty marker down on the field. Great catch, Cherry. Cherry dashes to score, but there is a penalty flag down on the field, and the Boston College coaching staff and players are out on the field on the far side. The indication I got from the referee was ineligible receiver downfield. Well, let's see. The apparent go-ahead touchdown is wiped off, and Boston College will absorb another penalty. And the officials are leaving the field, and they are being escorted off. Tennessee wins the football game. Back in 60 seconds after telling you the final score, Tennessee 10, Boston College 7.
Walt Harris was upstairs and on the phone with quarterback Jeff Francis. According to Harris, Jeff's comment was appropriate. He said, "There is a God." All points were scored by defense and kicking for the Vols. The next week, the Vols were back in the SEC and on the road against Mississippi. For the first time since 1951, the game would be hosted on campus in Oxford.
Wow.
As I remember Coach Majors coming into the team room and saying, "They remember what you do in November." Yeah. They remember what you do in November. And yep. I still remember that incredible game against Ole Miss, down in Ole Miss, which is one of my first games I finally did dress and did travel with the team. But that year I was out. A super dynamic, probably one of the best catches in Tennessee history was made by our then captain, Nate Middlebrooks, from tight end.
Yep.
And it's amazing how people forget about that. You know, Jeff, the ball got away from Jeff. It was raining. And that catch was on the third and forever. And Captain Nate Middleman made that catch and helped us seal the victory.
Ben, maybe I'm harping on this, but Mike Strange is just brilliant.
He's good.
Here's his report on the day. Quote, "With literary apologies to the homeboy, William Faulkner, it was a dark and stormy afternoon."
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah, more rain. Great, great, right? But to continue the quote, "And out of the soggy dusk arose a better late than never UT offense to score 3 late touchdowns and deliver a 20-12 SEC victory." Somewhere in the growing darkness, a spark finally turned into a flame for Tennessee. His reference there is the fact that the Rebels, in spite of not being, maybe the reason we had not been there since 1951, was there were no lights on the field at the Rebels campus. So
they need Bob Woodruff.
They needed Bob Woodruff, no doubt. So props to Mike Strange. Props, yes.
Now a confession. The game tape for 1988 Ole Miss does not exist.
Yeah.
At least in our library. If you're a fan out there and you have any recordings, by all means,
please
let us know.
Please,
we'd love to have a chat. But if we had the tape from that day, we'd be telling you about what Jeff Francis said was the strangest drive he'd ever been a part of.
Ben, 15 plays in this drive, 76 yards, and it began with the Vols down 10-0, okay?
What did it include?
It included 5 offensive holding penalties against UT.
Wow.
Pass interference and roughing the passer against Mississippi.
That's good.
Listen to this, because it's a 100-yard field, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
I believe so.
Okay, a total of 136 yards gained by Tennessee. 2 touchdowns, 1 was nullified by a penalty. A would-be TD caught out of bounds by TD Woods. 22 offensive plays in total.
Wow.
An 18-yard TD pass from Francis to Alvin Harper. 7 minutes and 13 seconds off the clock. And amazingly, a blocked extra point returned by Ole Miss 92 yards for 2 points. By the way, that was the first year and maybe the first instance that the NCAA allowed an extra point to be returned for 2 points.
Only in 1988, of course.
Of course. And by the way, that was the first attempt by Jason Julian of kicking an extra point.
So instead of pulling closer to Ole Miss 10-7, the score after all of that was 12-6.
Incredible.
Good
incredible.
Grief.
But all of that, Ben, pales in comparison to this. The aforementioned catch by Nate Middlebrooks. Said Walt Harris, quote, "It was a phenomenal catch."
Francis throwing downfield. It is caught. What a grab by Nate Middlebrooks.
Great play by the senior Nate Middlebrooks. When it's down and dirty, the seniors have to come through, and Nate surely does
that
right
clip
here.
Provided by Alan Spain from the old post-narrated replay show featuring Daryl Dickey along with John Ward.
The very next offensive series was more business as usual, except for the fact Jeff Francis received 5 stitches on his left hand while the defense was on the field.
Incredible.
Nothing's easy this year. He took the Vols 61 yards on 12 otherwise uneventful plays. Greg Amsler scored from the 3. The extra point was uneventful this time, thank goodness, so the Vols took the lead 13-12.
And thankfully, Ben, they would not give up that lead. The great Vince Moore, one of my all-time favorites, made sure of that. He scored from the 7-yard line after appearing to be stopped at the 5.
The next week, Jeff Francis, the Vols senior quarterback, made his final Neyland Stadium appearance, a memorable one, against Kentucky. He surpassed several school records and fired 4 touchdown passes through a downpour. He was 27 of 37 for 4 touchdowns and no interceptions.
But the primary concern for John Ward was, I guess, a lost business opportunity.
And it is literally pouring in Knoxville, Tennessee. But the fans are here. Bill, why didn't you negotiate the rainwear concession this year?
Oh, well, the rain continued, and so too did John Ward.
Still, though, without that rain gear concession.
I hope he was able to make ends meet.
Tennessee now comes back with 4 wide receivers. Harper slots to the left side. He's 6'5". Here's the throw to Harper in the end zone. Give it to him. Touchdown! Big Orange! He stops to throw. Penalty marker down. Pass into the end zone. Is caught. Give him 6. Touchdown! Thomas Woods! Francis to throw. Across the middle. Pass into the end zone. Give him 6. Thomas T.D. Woods! It's T.D. for the T.D. His 2nd in the game. 54-yard field goal attempt by Kentucky is blocked. Tennessee, he just caught that ball. I don't believe it. I have never seen that. Vando Davis came through and just caught that field goal try, Bill.
It hit him right in the gut and just stuck.
Intercepted Tennessee. Jason Julian.
Jason Julian pops on the ball and makes the interception at the 14-yard line. Brilliant reaction by the true freshman, who is now being hoisted by his teammates and carried to the sideline.
That's his first one, John. He'll remember that one for a long time.
4-3-2-1. Tennessee beats the Wildcat.
A fourth consecutive victory and another brilliant write-up by Mr. Strange. Quote, they did it on a rainy afternoon in November when it was too late to salvage a winning season, but not too late to prove there was talent and pride hiding behind an 0-6 start. Boy, that certainly sums up the season.
One more game, Vanderbilt.
I remember the Vanderbilt game. Guy, it was awful. I mean, the wind was blowing. Threw a couple passes there. It was like, oh, my God, you talk about. But completed them. It
right.
was like, that thing was a duck. I think it was one of those games where we actually kicked an extra point and it went almost through it and then got blown back for no good. So, yeah, that was kind of just an ugly way. The Vanderbilt game sort of summed up our season. A cold, wet, rainy, windy day. We won, but it was ugly.
There was literally a tornado watch in effect and 35-mile-per-hour winds.
I'm assuming they delayed the game.
Right, they had to. No, just dodge the lightning again.
Wow.
Kent Elmore, thanks to the tornado, had an 81-yard punt on a quick kick.
With a man deep, here's the snap, and it's going to be a quick kick, and he bangs it. Tennessee with the kick by Elmore that comes banging down at the Vanderbilt 25, rolling down to the 15, down to the 10, down to the 5. It is down at the 2-yard line by Vincent Moore. An 81-yard punt, Bill Anderson, shades of the 1930s.
Yesteryear is coming back, John.
Eventually, Tennessee got on the board in spite of the weather, at least when carrying the ball.
Amster, left side, dies, give it to him. Touchdown, Tennessee! Here the extra point try. It will be an adventure. It's in the air, and it just goes up and blows down short. He hit the ball up in the air. He hit it perfectly, but it got up there and just stopped and dropped down no good. Hand off McCarroll. McCarroll tries the right side, is knocked down. A fumble has occurred, and then it's been recovered by the Big White. Brian Kimbrough recovers for Tennessee, wearing white jerseys with orange numerals, as Shazon Bradley, the middle guard for Tennessee, put a hat on the ball. McCarroll coughed it up, and it was recovered on a windy day by Kimbrough. And here comes the sweep on the right side. Davis, 4-3-2-1, give him 6. Touchdown, Keith Davis. Keith Davis. And it was Davis from start to finish.
The two-point conversion, no way they wanted to kick anyway, was stopped short, but Tennessee found 2 points eventually.
Tennessee will have a four-man rush. They're setting up the return. High snap goes over his head, out of bounds, and so Tennessee gets its 2 points. The Vols failed on the two-point try, and not to take anything away from senior John Short, you never think, Bill, how difficult it is for a center to snap the ball to the wind. That time, he snapped it 30 yards.
Yeah, it really fired out of there. It went up in the stands back down there over the kicker's head.
Jones to throw. Good protection. Plenty of time. Pass downfield. Intercepted Tennessee. Picked away at the 35. Down to the 30. Down to the 25. Down to the 20. Down to the 15. Down to the 10. Keith Denson. First down goal. Big orange. The ball was tipped by Tracy Hayworth, and it was the alert Keith Denson, tailback turn quarterback, picking off the ball, returning it 34 yards.
The rain was literally blowing sideways like a hurricane, and there would be no more scoring after the interception. But who cares? This was the 5th win in a row.
Said Majors, I can't say enough about our seniors. I'll never forget their leadership as long as I live. They left us a heritage that makes me anxious to get back to work tomorrow. Here's Carmen Tagano.
But that team doesn't get enough credit for building the future, because you got to remember, end of that 88 season was a springboard to 3 really good Tennessee football seasons.
No
it
doubt.
Truly was. Those 5 games really mattered. And those kids weren't going to go out as an 0-11 football team. They were not going to lay down.
And except for the couple of seniors, they all would go back to work. Looking ahead. In fact, the 1988 team launched the next several years, part of which have been labeled the Decade of Dominance. That win in Memphis was the first of 10 wins in a row.
That's incredible, Ben. Tennessee would go on a 16-1 run that included an SEC championship in 89. From that day in Memphis, Tennessee would go on a 25-3-2 run that included back-to-back SEC championships. Should I go on?
Go on.
Okay. From that day in Memphis, Tennessee would go on a 34-6-2 run, finishing in its third New Year's Day bowl in a row. So, Ben, I can only speak for myself, but never again will I refer to that team as the team that was 0-6.
Definitely not. That's the season we finished 5-0 and taught a bunch of talented young players what it means to be a Vol for life. Correct me if I'm wrong, but that 88 season seems a little familiar.
Are you maybe referring to the 2019 season?
Well, we didn't start as badly, but we didn't start great, but we finished so strong.
Finished strong. And as far as what may be, only time will tell.
Let's see what these guys do. Thanks for listening to A Host of Volunteers.
A Host of Volunteers is hosted by Ben Bates.
It's written and produced by Barry Rice. Archives are provided by the Vol Network and VFL Film.
Sound design and technical support, Paul Jones, Ben Altshuler, and Aurelation Music.
Check out photos and episode notes at our website, ahostofvolunteers.com. Also thanks to the great Alan Spain for archive support.
And finally, and most importantly, thanks to the Letterman's Club and Chris Wampler, and all the players, really. Without them, we'd have no show, so thanks to all the legends.
Until we meet again, thank you and good afternoon.